Hello, movie fans, and welcome to I Talk Movies. Today, I am in studio with Renee Felice Smith. We will be talking about the new movie in which she stars, The Relationship. She also co-wrote, co-produced, and co-directed this movie. You might also recognize her from NCIS LA, so don't worry, we'll talk about that a little bit too. Don't go away.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's I Talk Movie.
I love it. The clapping makes me feel so good.
Yeah.
Like, I know. Our huge studio audience. I love it.
Thank you, everybody.
I love it. Thanks so much for joining us. Today, I'm in studio with Renee Felice Smith. Renee, where can everyone find you on social media before we get started?
That would be Renee Felice Smith, at Renee Felice Smith on Instagram, or Renee F. Smith on Twitter. But to be perfectly honest, I'm way more active on Instagram because I'm a visual person and I just think it's more fun.
Absolutely. So now you know where you can find Renee. I'm Zoe Hewitt, your host. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Real Zoe Hewitt. And so first, getting started with The Relationship, we were talking just before that now that you have a movie called The Relationship, it's hard to say relationship.
Yeah, it's impossible. I'll just find myself in conversation and I'm just constantly saying relationship. I'm tripping over my own words and it's all our fault. It's yeah, by our own design, Chris, myself, co-writers, co-producers, co-everything else in life, co-directors, came up with the title and we just... Yeah, we really did it in. We've done ourselves in.
I feel like that this is the type of word that could take off. Like this is something people get.
I'm telling you, Zoe, you're onto it.
I know,
and so are we.
This is a new hashtag, and people can hashtag relationship, right, and find out all about the movie. Now, this movie is so great about these two awkwardly wonderful characters.
Thank
so you play Beck and Liam, who's played by Matt Bush.
Matt Bush, super talented. Just, oh my God, you'll fall in love with him from the second you lay on eyes on him. He's just so complicated. He just plays this complicated character effortlessly. He's very fun to watch.
Well, you guys both are fun to watch, as is the rest of the cast, and you've assembled a cast of friends, really. So how did you go to them and say, like, by the way, can you help me out? I've got a script.
Right. Well, Chris and I had the idea back in April of last year, actually 2016 now, and we wrote the script in 2 weeks with another friend of ours, Dana Scanlon, who is an amazing writer and worked on NCIS LA, so I knew him from, you know, my day job, so to speak. And we pitched him the idea over lunch one day. Chris and I had about a 40-page treatment. We had some odd scenes written. We knew the beats we wanted to hit. We had never written a feature before. Dana is super prolific, and he's written tons of features, and he's been hired over and over again because he works so quickly. And we knew that if we worked with a structure, you know, a structure genius as he is, we would be able to crank this thing out in the timeline, the condensed timeline that we had. We only had 2 months to make this film. So we wrote the script in 2 weeks, which is ridiculous. If you know, the timeline for, you know, how long these things actually take in the real world, it could take 2 years.
Right.
But we just literally cleared our calendars and got in the room together. We outlined the script in the first week, and the second week we broke it up into acts, and we took the scenes that we wanted to write from each act, and then we compiled everything, and we had about a 170-page script. That's also ridiculous, because we just overwrote. You know, we wrote everything so that we had something to kind of hack into, and then Chris and I took that edit, that version of the script, and we went through again, and, you know, and kind of formed it into the movie that you can find today and watch today. Mm-hmm.
And if anyone's wondering what they'll find when they find this movie, it's basically about two characters who decide that they're not going to be in a relationship because that changes people. So they are going to have strictly a friendship and go away together.
Right.
And things, of course, I mean, we can surmise, probably not going to be exactly like thinking.
Two self-professed loners who go away together for the weekend, and then they've sworn off relationships. They've seen them basically not work out, and they don't want that for themselves. They're just looking for a buddy. Mm-hmm. And they go away together and essentially move through every major kind of relationship trope that we've seen in every rom-com from the beginning of time. Mm-hmm. They move through those tropes within a 3-day period. So everything is super heightened. Chris and I are a big fan of Charlie Kaufman and Michelle Gondry, you know, the surreal, using the surreal to heighten those moments for added effect and metaphor, you know. I love watching films that are imaginative. Eternal Sunshine was a huge inspiration for both Chris and myself. It kind of hit at the perfect time. We were both in high school and seeing that film, and you're like, whoa, films can be this is a film. Films can be made like this. This is so different, you know, that bed in the middle of, you know, the beach. Just it elevates the story and I think makes it more impactful. So that's really what we wanted to do with this film as well. And that's why we have so many surreal elements that help hopefully elevate the story and make each moment more impactful.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think so tied in with those surreal moments, they really exist as a lot of symbolism too for what's going on. Like I loved when your characters are, I feel like now I don't know if I should say it. I don't want to give anything away, but I'll just say then that there's a moment with your faces.
Yes.
And I love that.
Thank you. Thanks. That's one of my favorite scenes in the film. Not to give too much away, but there are lots of practical effects that we used in the film. And in this one piece, I feel like we have to say it.
Now
I don't know. How do we talk about it without talking about it?
At least it's not a big, it's not a plot moment where we're giving the plot away.
Exactly. Well, these two people are obviously getting to know each other and what happens, you know, metaphorically, we kind of take our masks off, right? And then we're finally honest with each other in that next moment. And that happens visually. We see that unmasking happen on screen in a very practical way. Chris and I are also huge fans of Jim Henson, and I'm sure you're going to talk about this, and I'm probably totally jumping through the bullet points, my character in the film, Beck, is basically a conflicted character as well. You know, she's really hard on herself, as a lot of us are. She has body image issues, body dysmorphia, and her insecurity is voiced through a puppet in the film. And we felt that that was a way to talk about some serious subject matter that's kind of difficult to talk about, honestly, but do it in a way that's digestible, that we can laugh about it. We're all human. Let's laugh about this thing together, you know? Let's experience some levity.
Right. And, I mean, it's interesting then if you think about it in terms of, like, child psychology using puppets to communicate through. Because, everything seems very grounded in reality despite the surreal moments. And then we get the puppet and it's like, okay, I still accept this in reality, but this definitely gives it another angle.
So good to hear. Right. Yeah, that's what we tried to do. We tried to really ground our central characters and hope that the audience would then accept these surreal moments and accept them as truths, you know, throughout the film, that she really does have this curse words?
Go for it.
Okay. You know, this asshole voice in her head that's constantly telling her she's not good enough, she's too fat, she's too ugly, she doesn't deserve to be loved, you know? And that is, and he is the physicalization of that voice. Chippy is the character in the film. He represents that side of her that is really battling her in every area of her life.
Right.
So hopefully, you know, that was effective in illustrating that sort of, you know, relationship with oneself.
Yeah, and I think because that is so relatable. I mean, who doesn't have that little voice inside at some point? I mean, maybe some people have it more than others, but at some point there's that voice that's not being the nicest.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Sometimes, you know, we are our greatest enemies, you know, and I had a friend once say that the worst things that have happened to her in her life have only happened in her head. And it's so true.
It is.
It's, we really do manifest our own obstacles in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. So I think it was for Chris and I both an exercise in talking about those obstacles that we've personally felt in our lives and talking about them in a way where people can relate and we can kind of find common ground, you know?
Right. And your character and Liam seem to almost recognize each other from the beginning.
Mm.
You know, I mean, he was at this, you know, this great event where she's like left by himself on stage and giving this great peanut butter and jelly monologue.
Rap monologue. Yes.
And like your character really connected with that.
Yeah.
And I like that it wasn't, it's like you two both didn't see each other as a joke. And I think that's what grounded the movie, that the characters were understandable and they were understandable in this world,
cool.
if that makes sense.
Oh, that's good to hear.
And so for you, like working on these different scenes, was there a particular scene that felt like it talked to you more than the
interesting.
Others?
Well, another surreal moment, kind of discussing, you know, the body dysmorphia and also kind of this issue that's come up now because of social media and how we're constantly comparing ourselves to others. There is a scene in the film, Beck does a kind of a burlesque dance as a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And that is juxtaposed with an actual burlesque dancer, which represents Liam's ex-girlfriend in the film. So Beck is constantly comparing herself to this image. She doesn't know what his ex-girlfriend looks like. She's concocted this all by herself. Again, we are our own worst enemies. And she's comparing herself to that image where she's kind of carved this beautiful blonde, leggy, burlesque dancer into her nightmare and placed herself in a giant peanut butter and jelly costume. You know, this like huge, and I do connect with that. I feel that a lot in my own life. You know, and it's that pressure from the outside world that has said, oh, well, attractive women look like this and attractive women talk like this. And if you want to be attractive, then, well, you better do those things. And so I think, you know, from a young age, that happens to young girls. Yeah. We feel that pressure. We see it. And it just becomes part of the language surrounding femininity and surrounding what it means to be sexy and, you know, desirable. And why is that?
Right.
Those are the images we've been presented with.
Right.
Where are the alternative images? Where are the people who look like me? Right. Or, you know what I mean? So I think that's one of my favorite scenes in the film because I was also a dancer growing up. So I spent a lot of time in front of the mirror as a result. And that is just an unfortunate part of that world where we're just, you know, visually comparing ourselves with others and it can do a number on your confidence.
Right. And especially when there is no evidence that the peanut butter and jelly sandwich isn't what he found attractive and wanted.
Exactly.
You know, that was, again, like all in all, Beck's mind.
All
about
in
what
her
she
mind.
Wanted.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. All in her own mind. And I like I said before, we are kind of really we're really good at creating obstacles for ourselves. Right. So this film is about, you know, identifying those obstacles and trying to navigate around them.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And yep. I loved the peanut butter and jelly because I felt a little bit like peanut butter and jelly is having this resurgence. I don't know if you saw Patty Cakes that came out, but they also peanut butter and jelly. Yes. And so I thought this is like the time for peanut butter and jelly.
That's really funny. I haven't seen that film yet, but someone told me about that and I need to check this out. I mean, I obviously, in my own life, my mom makes the best peanut butter and jelly. Karen Smith from New York. If you're ever in town, look her up. No, she makes just the best peanut butter and jelly. She knows exactly how to spread it out. There really is this ratio.
There is.
That you're trying to hit.
But I have to hear it then so we can compare.
Okay.
What makes the best peanut butter and jelly sandwich? What is that ratio? I'll tell you if I agree.
Okay, let's
know if we can be friends or not. We'll decide.
Okay. Compare and contrast.
Yes.
Should you want to go first?
No.
Oh, good. Okay.
I promise I won't change my answer, though.
That's fine. Okay. And I respect that. Thank you for that. Okay. So I would say I'm a fan of country white bread for peanut butter and jelly only.
Okay.
This is part of the bread selection is big deal.
It can be a big deal, yeah.
Because I have a friend who's like potato bread all the way, and I'm like, potato bread? You know, potato bread's great. If we're going ham and cheddar, turkey Swiss, I'm all for potato bread. But for this, I'm really looking for that country white.
Okay, country white. And how do you put, what about the peanut butter?
Okay.
Crunchy or smooth?
Crunchy. I could go, honestly, perfectly honest, I could go either way. I'm an equal opportunist peanut butter lover. I embrace that peanut butter. I want it. That's fine with me.
How does Karen Smith make it, though?
Karen Smith usually is going smooth.
Okay.
She's going old school Jiffy smooth.
Okay.
That was like the lunch pail, like standard. And I also, this is an essential part of my recipe. Mm. Or I should say my mom's. My mom makes her own jelly.
Oh.
Karen
it's hard
Smith,
to compete with that.
Karen Marie Felice Smith makes her own jelly. Concord grape jelly. Uh-huh. She grows it in her backyard.
No.
In my family's home, in the backyard.
Wow.
She planted it. She used to get it from a friend's mom who just had it growing wild in her yard, and they never harvested it or anything. So anyway, she planted her own. Now she grows it.
It must be amazing.
Yeah. It's kind of game changing.
Yeah.
So
homemade jelly, I think. You just elevated the bar right there. I was going to go with strawberry for the record.
I like that.
But no chunks.
Okay.
No jam.
And smooth.
I like smooth.
Okay.
Yes.
Cool.
But the white bread, I can take it. But the big thing for me is that the bread isn't too thick because sometimes you have too much bread ratio. And I never thought there could be too much bread of anything except
you're
for
right.
peanut butter and jelly.
You're right,
if it's
because
too thick.
Then it's a texture problem.
Yes.
And there's like a dryness. I do a glass of milk with it.
Okay. I mean, I can live with that.
Okay, good. Okay, see, we're friends.
Oh, good.
Okay, good. Okay, perfect.
Now,
we got past.
Now I'm really glad.
A major hurdle.
I thought we would have to end things right here without hearing any more about the movie.
No. We've got this.
Good. Because as much as we're joking about making peanut butter and jelly, that actually is a really integral part of the movie. And even by the end, it's like, wait a minute, you didn't make this quite right.
Right.
And so what does the peanut butter and jelly represent to you in the movie?
Well, I think it's just a metaphor for, you know, slowing down, taking your time. Mm-hmm. I believe the quote in the film is, you're going to need to spread that shit out. And that is essentially what these two characters need to do. You know, Liam takes the jelly and he globs it in the center of this and he rushes it. He makes the sandwich too fast and he's just trying to catch up. Mm-hmm. So I think that is a theme that we're seeing, you know, people in and around this like late 20s millennial group of folks tend to either want to catch up with their friends who are now engaged or just had a baby, and they're like, "Hey, you, okay, let's do this. I know nothing about you. It's gonna be totally fine. We're not gonna crash and burn. Like, let's do this." And then they find themselves 3 days in,
right,
or, you know, 3 weeks in, and the bottom falls out, right? Mm-hmm. So, I think it's the sandwich, you know, the peanut butter and jelly, as much as it's just a tasty treat, it's also this, like, really kind of nice, special metaphor for, like, taking your time, spread it out. Make the sandwich you want to make intentionally.
Nice.
Maybe not so accidentally. Mm-hmm.
I like that. That's very nice.
I don't know. That just happened. That just happened.
It is good. Clearly, you're at one with the movie.
Yay! Now I know what it all means.
And so you pretty much knew everyone except for a few people. Is that right? Yes. When you did the casting.
Yes.
So how did you go about casting the unknowns, let's say?
Okay, cool. That's fun. Okay, so Matt Bush actually... he's become a friend now, but he was an actor that we've always kind of like been on the lookout for. Chris and I grew up on Long Island. He was in a film years back directed by Greg Mottola called Adventureland. That movie is fabulous. If you haven't seen it, I hope that you have seen it. Kristen Wiig, Jesse Eisenberg, like the list goes on, but he is part of that ensemble film and he's really funny and he's very himself. And we really appreciate what Matt Bush brings. Mm-hmm. So Chris, actually my, you know, writing partner and director and partner in life, he was like, "Oh my God, what about, you know, Matt of Bush from Adventureland? What's he up to? What's he doing?" And we knew that he was on the Goldbergs. He's on an ABC show, the Goldbergs, and, we're like, "Well, maybe he has like a couple months off. I have a couple months off. You know, it's my hiatus." So a friend of ours, another friend of ours, Tamara Notcutt, is a casting director, and she's amazing. And she reached out on our behalf, and we sent him the script. He read it, and the next day he was like, "Yeah, I want to meet with you guys. I want to hear what you guys have to say." So it was definitely our first kind of... We felt like it was our first audition, you know, as a writer-director duo. Yeah. We've made shorts in the past, but we've made them all within our circle of friends. Mm-hmm. So Matt truly was the first person that we were kind of going, "Okay, do you want to be part of the circle of friends?" And he was so cool. We felt like we had known him for years. We felt like we went to high school with him. He's from New Jersey. We're from Long Island. There's a lot of shared, you know, kind of experiences in that alone. And then we just have a similar sensibility, you know. Mm-hmm. We were, like, insisting on paying for each other, you know, we were at a coffee shop. And we're like, no, I got this. No, we got, you know, and that went back and forth.
Yeah.
You know, when you have that, like, kind of, I don't know, just he's got this generosity about him as a performer, as a real life human. He's just the best.
As a real life human, I like
that. Yeah.
And so you said that one of the things that drew you to him was because of Adventureland. So how hard is it coming also from a show that, I mean, you've been on since 2010, so I mean that's an amazing run.
Yeah.
To look at someone and say, they might not be the person I see on screen.
Interesting. Yeah, no, of course. You're always taking that risk. But we knew if we met with him, we could kind of figure that out. And he just exceeded all our hopes, really. So it worked out in that way. It totally worked out. I know. They say, like, "Oh, don't meet your heroes." Right. You know, it's like... but luckily he's a friend and he's been great. And like, we're in a bachelor league together, you know, bachelor, bachelorette.
Oh, so last night's big 2 hour after the rose, were you?
Oh God. What a mess this year.
That's a whole other
Batch
show.
Nation, what happened?
I know.
Ari.
I know. And after such a boring season, and then we get to that.
Ari, you serious. Boom. Yeah. Nailed it.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a bummer.
Big question then, who won the Bachelor Fantasy League?
Oh, I was in first. Last week I was in first, but all of my final roses were out.
Oh.
I had no one. And you get a real nice bump if you have someone left in the game. And one of our friends in the league, Steve, had Becca as the final rose.
Wow.
So I think he got like a 200-point boost, and he just flew to the top. But kind of fun and great for Steve. Last season, he came in dead last.
Oh.
So
it all balances out.
It all balances out, and now he's got the trophy. Okay, so this is a fun fact.
Yes.
Matt's girlfriend, Carrie, she's awesome. She's also one of the hosts on the IMDb show. She was the winner last season. Mm-hmm. Together, they had a trophy made. It's like a gold-plated rose. It's like the frozen rose in Beauty and the Beast. Attached to an existing trophy of, like, a girl roller skating. And the bottom, you know, there's like a plaque on the bottom, and they're having each season's winner engraved.
Nice.
So it's pretty official.
That's definitely
and
official.
We're really committed to this bachelorette league.
I really like this level of commitment that I see from you.
Yeah, it's pretty intense.
It is, and it is awesome.
Thank you.
But I want to know then, just to go back to that momentarily.
Yeah.
Did Becca count as the final winner? Because shouldn't it have been Lauren then?
I don't know
if Steve should have gotten that 200-point bump.
But guess what? The Bachelorette, the Fantasy League, that's how they counted the points.
Oh.
There was a tricky question.
Yes.
There was a trick, I think, question on the website or on one of the reminder emails that said, we're going really down into this rabbit hole here. It's just happening.
Let's turn into the Bachelor after show.
No,
you guys, I promise we'll get back to the relationship.
Okay, let's just swap up. I talk Bachelor. Okay. All right. So there was an email that was sent out that said, Becca, you know, who does he choose? Uh-huh. Becca, Lauren, neither.
Oh.
In the middle, I'm like, okay, this is a dead giveaway. This hasn't happened ever before. Mm-hmm. But on the actual questions, the league questions, that was not an option.
Oh, interesting.
I don't know.
Interesting. It is all very interesting.
Yeah. It's an experiment, really.
Just like making a movie and making a movie with your friends. And how is co-writing, co-producing, co-directing with your co-partner?
You're good at that. You totally got us back on track. Very A plus.
Thank you.
Major bonus points there.
Yes. Like 200 points like Steve?
At least 200.
Yes!
You've just blasted to the top of the lead.
Only if I get a trophy that includes a gold rose and a roller skating girl.
Guess what? I can make it happen.
Yes! I see your peanut butter and jelly sandwich then. So how was it co-everythinging with your co?
Yeah, awesome. Chris and I have known each other from the time we're 11 years old.
Oh, wow.
Don't worry. We haven't been dating since then. It's not completely disgusting.
I wouldn't be worried. You could be friends since you're 11.
Oh, no, we're friends. But,
yeah.
But, you know, we weren't like, you know, playground sweethearts or anything like that. But we grew up together. And I think as a result, you know, we share a lot of the same sensibilities.
Mm-hmm.
Chris is a composer. And I'm an actor. And we wanted to find new ways to work together. And we just had to make our own projects in order to make that happen. I think it's really, for me anyway, I enjoy working with another person. I enjoy the collaboration. I just, simple as it sounds, two heads better than one. Mm-hmm. You know, you can have a conversation about what you're doing. And, you know, the other person offers perspective. And I've only had the best of experiences in, you know, a co-writing, co-directing partnership. But yeah, some people are like, how do you guys do this? This is like, I could never, I don't understand how you have a regular life and then also work together all the time.
But
just
it depends
together
on,
all the time.
But it's the relationship. And
yeah.
Like seeing things the same way.
Totally.
Then,
and I think that is a huge part of it. You know, if I wanted to write deep, dark, you know, period dramas and Chris was doing, you know, big, broad comedies, that would probably be hard. And we probably wouldn't be able to work together because of that. But because we want to make kind of these weirdo, dark comedies that speak to, you know, maybe a different indie audience than than it works.
Right. No, absolutely.
Yeah.
And because you've gathered so many people around you who have your sensibilities, clearly, who know what you guys want, I do have to ask, though, about Linda Hunt. I feel like she is probably the most recognizable out of everyone. And so how is it going to someone like her, who you work with on a regular basis, and saying, by the way, like, can you help me out?
Totally. I mean, it is kind of that, you know. Linda Hunt, Oscar winner, you know, she's been around. She has an amazing body of work, and she is a very intuitive, well-trained actor. So it is kind of nerve-wracking, you know, when you send the script over and you're kind of waiting. You're like, oh, has she read it yet? Haven't heard from her. I just saw her at work. Is she going to say anything? You know, it is a little bit of that at first. But she was wonderful, and she really got it, you know? She understood the surreal. She understood what we were trying to achieve. And she's a storyteller herself. She can tell a story like no one else. Yeah. So I think she appreciates kind of, you know, an out-of-the-box story. And she responded to it. She responded well. So the only caveat she had was this. She read the script and she said, I don't see Dr. Lipschweiss in the desert. And we said, okay, where do you see Dr. Lipschweiss? She said, I see Dr. Lipschweiss in your house, like our the house that we live in. So basically she was telling us in, you know, so many words that she will not be traveling to Joshua Tree. And so she doesn't think Dr. Lipschweiss should be traveling to Joshua Tree. But she thinks that she would travel, you know, a half a mile from her house to my house. And that Dr. Lipschweiss should probably show up there. So that is that was the one we were like, okay, how do we work this out? And actually, our production designer, Steve, who blasted to the top of the Bachelor League...
same Steve.
Same old
Steve. I don't
know
how I feel about this Steve.
Good old Steve. Let me tell you, he can pick from very far out. You know, he has the foresight. He's looking into the future almost when he picks these final rows. Sorry, I totally went full out Bachelor again. Stop me. Okay, but he also had the foresight to imagine the tent acting as Dr. Lipschweiss's office. We, you know, in the house originally we were thinking, okay, well, what if the bedroom, you know, just becomes the office magically? They open the room and then they go into their therapist, you know, into the therapist's office that way. And Steve was like, oh, what if we just recreate the tent? That can be anywhere. And we also play with perspective and size. And once we're in the tent, we're in this new space. And it's really fun and kind of magical in that way.
Yeah, and it definitely fits with the rest of the movie and these other surreal moments. The tent just feels like it belongs there. Like, why wouldn't you go into a tent to talk to her suddenly? It just...
Cool.
It all belongs together.
I'm glad that worked out.
I think so. A plus.
I'm glad you approve. I really am. But, yeah, I agree. I think it's like, well, of course, that's what should happen. And I think it's... you know, a highlight in the film.
Yeah.
The fact that, okay, now they're in a tent. Right. And that's real because these people are grounded and they're working through this new relationship.
And you guys actually debuted at South by Southwest, is that right? And this is actually your second film there, which is amazing.
Yes.
How did you feel getting the call then the second time and finding out, oh my God, we're in?
Oh my God. I mean, to get a film into any festival is like a huge sigh of relief. And then to get into South By, you're just kind of blown away. It's kind of surreal in itself. No pun intended.
That'll be in the next movie.
exactly. So we produced a short with a friend of ours, Sam Bennett, who is an amazingly talented filmmaker. And we Sam and I developed that script over, you know, the course of a year or so, and it got into South By, part of the shorts block. Mm-hmm. And we had a great time, and Chris helped produce that short, and so we were all there together. And we were seeing, you know, features. We were seeing as much as we could because we had that film badge. And you know that film badge is like serious bucks. So we were really trying to make the most of it. And we, you know, we were seeing everything. And we saw this little film, actually. I think it was called Night Owls. And it's another two-hander, two people, one location. And it was a feature. Mm-hmm. And we were like, oh, I think we could make something like this. And mm-hmm. this is how we could bridge into, you know, kind of like the next silo of films, so to speak, you know. And we and that was kind of the first little like, hey, maybe you guys are going to make a feature. You know, that was the first little like light that kind of went off. And then Chris and I started talking about it shortly after the that festival. Mm-hmm. I had done a short with another filmmaker, Nisha Ganantra, that was for PBS. And it was, it was her project. And we were just sharing ideas. And I was telling her that I've made a couple shorts. And this one that we made went to South By. And she was, you know, really generous with her advice. And she said, Renee, why don't you guys just make a feature? I feel like that's the next step. You're going to make another short. What's that really going to do at this point? You've already been there. You've already done that. You went to a major festival with a short. Mm-hmm. So what's next? How do you, again, kind of jump into level up?
Level up. I was going to say the next rose bracket.
Ooh, good. Ooh, that was quick. I should have, good job.
No, thank you. It's because you were focusing on the film.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Exactly. We got to balance this thing out. Yes. It's part relationship and the other part
bachelor. It's part which is a relationship in and of itself.
OMG. So, yeah. You said it. Yes. Nail on head.
Yes.
Maybe there's a cross promotional something or other.
Clearly there is.
I mean, really?
Clearly.
Every season is a full-on relationship.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And so your character also, Beck, is very different from your role of Nell on NCIS LA, where you are into tech and very different.
Yeah.
So who do you feel like is more like the real Renee?
Interesting. I feel like there's a blend. I feel like I'm somewhere in the middle, you know? I'm not quite as type A. Nell is like Renee to the 10th power, you know? She's like the smartest girl in the room. Her IQ's off the charts. She tends to interrupt people and kind of finish their sentences, which she's actually pulled back a lot on that over the years. But every once in a while, you know, she kind of oversteps her boundaries because she's a little precocious, and then she's kind of knocked back a peg. But I think that her tenacity is something that I possess. Mm-hmm. Nell's extremely tenacious and ambitious. Mm-hmm. And I think that I am ambitious as well. And I think that ambition, I think, usually has a negative connotation. Because, I don't know, I just have a feel. I feel that a lot of times ambition is lumped in with like a ruthlessness. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's false.
Yeah.
I think that we can be ambitious and we can be really kind and we can be really generous and really helpful, but we can want, we can want for ourselves.
Yes.
And I think that as a female, I don't know about you, but I think, you know, throughout my life, different times, certain people have been like, maybe you have enough. And you're like, wait a second, why can't I also want that for myself, you know? So I think that's kind of interesting. And Nell really is pretty gracious with that ambition. And I think that it's something that audience members really appreciate, that she is this kind of driven, type A, truth teller.
Right. And you happened onto one of my favorite topics, because I agree. I think ambition has a negative connotation, but I think for women specifically, along with calling like a girl bossy instead of a leader, same thing.
No,
so
my gosh,
yes, 100%. I completely, one of my favorite topics for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it is. It's very different. If Nell were, I'm trying to think of now the masculine Nell, which I guess is Neil. I don't know.
I don't know.
Nell or Neil.
Sure, sure.
Right? Then there would be no problem at all with that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, she would just be driven, period.
Right. You know? Right.
But I think that actually on the show she has garnered a level of respect amongst the teammates. Mm-hmm. And she's really been like very clutch in many situations. She's really, you know, stepped up. And kind of save the day in a lot of situations, which is great for an audience to see. You know, this kind of younger, nerd-esque, intelligent, forward-thinking young woman come to the rescue of the big burly dudes.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So that's kind of fun.
It is. It's nice to see that. It's nice to have that happen as well.
Yeah.
And you actually were presented with an award for women in tech, right?
Yes.
Because of this role, but which is not like you normally, like tech-wise, right?
Yeah, tech-wise. Oh, wow.
So you practice all the dialogue, right?
Yes.
At the grocery store. Is that where it is?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. So in the beginning, you know, it's another language altogether, learning how to interface. Yeah, I know that now. Yes. Interface with different programs and to talk about the technical aspects of the military, weaponry. I mean, these are all things that are not in my world. So what do I have to do? I have to research them and I have to know what I'm talking about so that it can make sense and so I can actually memorize it. Yeah. So I do. I you know, I spend a fair amount of time on Google looking things up and making things real for myself. Sometimes I draw little pictures in the margins and things like that. Like I said, I'm a visual person, so that helps me to visualize what it is I'm talking about so that hopefully the audience can understand what this concept is, you know?
Right.
Because it's not something we deal with, you know, in civilian life.
Right, right. Like, break it down.
Yeah, exactly. Break it down. And yeah, so that's what I've really tried to do with Nell. But it's gotten easier. I will say that. I think muscle, memory is a muscle and you can strengthen it. And I've learned that over the course of 8 years. You know, I used to really stress out about like a monologue or some sort of very technical, detailed speech. And now I push it now because sometimes I look at it the morning of and I'm like, ooh, I probably should have looked at that last night, but it's also a challenge, and I like that because it keeps me really present in the scene. So yeah, now I do a lot of it the day of, in the morning. You know, if I'm getting
risky
ready,
business there,
risky business. Yep, living on the edge,
definitely living on the edge. And before we wrap up, one more question for you about the show.
Yeah.
Now I know you've got some big things coming up. Still, can you share any of it? What can you share that's not under strict lock and key?
Sure. This is exciting. We are currently writing a series for Awesomeness TV, which is really fun and exciting. It's a vigilante story, another strong female central character who will go on a journey throughout the series. So I can't really give any more. That's basically all I can say on that. We're also working on another feature, which it kind of makes sense in the world of the relationship. It is a another relationship film about the modern dating landscape. It's particularly app culture, dating app culture. But it's also got a sci-fi twist.
Oh, okay.
So we like to call it like Lobster for Millennials. The Lobster for Millennials, if you can imagine kind of that happening. But that's the next feature that we're working on. So.
Well, it sounds very exciting. And if people want to keep up with you, find out about all of your great projects, where can they find you on social media?
Yeah, Renee Felice Smith on Instagram. And that's, yeah, that's usually where I hang out.
the best spot. And maybe you'll show off some of your doodles in your script.
Oh, yeah, totally. That's a great idea. Yeah, I've never done that. Okay, done.
So make sure you check out Renee's Instagram. I'm Zoe Hewitt. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Real Zoe Hewitt. Until next time, have a great time at the movies. Bye-bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, thanks, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.